You're listening to The Dividend, presented by Fees Always Win, the show before the show, after the show. It is what it is.
Bankruptcy, Michael, is nature's do-over. It's a fresh start. It's a clean slate.
Like the witness protection program.
Exactly. Not at all.
What's a rip?
A rip, commission. That's why we work here.
We make huge rips.
No, I still don't know how it works.
But you and me, the brokers, we're taking home cold hard cash via commission.
Right.
No matter whether our clients make money or lose money, Duke and Duke get the commissions.
The only thing we don't know is your fee.
My fee is the free market. And you're part of it.
Yeah. Welcome back to The Dividend. Episode 40 of Fees Always Win, and this week we talk about shareholder rights and bankruptcies. It's the talk of the town right now, with a couple of companies and big changes. Ello, Scion of the Delta, is out of town this week. He'll return for episode 41 and 42, but I am joined by Cassie, Scion of the Household.
Hi!
How are you doing tonight, Cassie?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm sitting right next to you. All right. Well, let's get into a couple of articles, as this is, a corporate of, now we've been almost invested with this personal portfolio for a year. It'll be a year in March, and real truly modifying or looking at the 401ks in a little more detail than traditionally did before. There's a couple of big changes this year, and this truly came from bankruptcy. As one of these companies, I was hoping you can give me some insight too, because I have zero. I don't even think I've walked into one of these stores. Video killed the radio star, and Gymboree killed the affordable child clothing market for a time. Two bankruptcies later, Gymboree is gone as they filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy this week, and big box store children clothes sections are thriving. And the same is kind of for the video, that nobody's watching music videos. There was like the Royce da 5'9" one that came out this week and made me go back and listen to the album again, but the radio star still exists. With a 4-year-old son, it's almost odd that I've never walked into one of these stores, because I do remember that they're almost everywhere and at every clearance center. This article comes from Business Insiders. Gymboree is reportedly planning to close all 900 of its stores. Gymboree is nearing liquidation. The child clothing retailer is expected to file bankruptcy protection this week and will plan to close all 900 of its stores, which include the brands Gymboree, Janie and Jack, and Crazy 8. The Wall Street Journal reports, citing people familiar with the matter, it is possible that the Janie and Jack stores could be salvaged if the company finds a buyer for those stores. Gymboree did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The store has suffered sales decline for years. The company filed for bankruptcy previously in June 2017, closed nearly 400 stores in the process, and at the time of filing, it had 1,281 locations and employed more than 11,000 workers. The liquidation would not impact Gymboree Play and Music, a company with more than 800 locations that was sold in 2016, and it offers music, art, play classes for baby and toddlers. So immediately what stands out to me, it sounds like that's the part of the business they should have kept.
Yeah, I to be quite honest, I've only walked into a Gymboree maybe a handful of times, and it was only to look around to see if there was something I could get for somebody's birthday. I didn't personally buy anything for our son there because I feel like it's more affordable buying clothes at Walmart than going to a quote-unquote specialty store for kids, because they grow out of it so dang fast. And why am I going to spend the same amount that I spend on my own clothes? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So they should probably just stick to the Gymboree Play and Music, because I feel like that's probably going to be more successful than anything else. So,
but now that they don't own Gymboree Play and Music, It seems like the play would have been, no pun intended, is to own those stores and diversify inside those stores selling clothes along with the experience that you're able to bring your kid here every week and he could interact with something. And instead they said, let's just have a high-end clothes. Because I'm on the same thought. I will buy most of his clothes from Target or Walmart. Target if I needed something I feel a little better quality, or if it has some cachet. I want to get a Rolling Stone shirt for a four-year-old because my four-year-old has better taste than your four-year-old. Or
they have no clue what it is.
Yeah, okay. He has no clue. He has no clue what NASA is. He just has a bunch of NASA shirts because that's what Target has right now. On the other thought, I'm not against buying brand name. But if I'm going to spend $20 for a shirt from Gymboree or $20 from Polo, I'm going to buy Polo every time.
Of course.
That they're never going to win that battle. And that's the part where I'm not sure if they saw that coming. That, one, we have more choices. I don't feel like this is Amazon killing another company, because I've never bought anything off of Amazon for them clothes-wise outside of a onesie and a unique shirt with dinosaurs all over it.
Yeah.
Those are the two things I've ever bought for them there. So it's not Amazon. I could go to Target or Walmart and get a shirt for $7. Or I could go to Gymboree and get a special shirt. And it's not even that special if there are 1,200 stores.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that they let an organization file bankruptcy twice within a 3-year span, and they made it harder for an individual to file bankruptcy at all. That, what was their plan to get out of bankruptcy? Hey, we're going to close some stores. We're still not going to pay our debts, but give us a chance. Okay, we couldn't pay our debts. Now we're not going to pay any of them again, and we're going to sell off this remaining Janie and Jack store.
Was there, like, different ownership at that time during the bankruptcy, or
I'm not leadership? Sure. Should it matter? They say if, like,
if they were able to argue and file for bankruptcy again, I mean, they must have had proof the first time saying, oh, we could get out of this, and this is why, right?
So according to this article from NBC, they came out of their reorganization of Chapter 11 in 2017 and launched on Amazon Prime Day, which is a really weird timing. Let's launch on the biggest online day of the year.
That is
weird. And by then, Amazon was already established as being one of the biggest of the year. But, quote, Gymboree Group Chief Executive Daniel Griesmeyer stated, "It's really an all-new Gymboree, different in almost every single way. The product is completely re-engineered, redesigned, it's elevated quality, elevated aesthetic, and a new mix-and-match capability that hasn't been part of the offering to date." The Gymboree announced it was refreshing its personality, but the retailer's offering as much as 80% off of its three brands, coinciding with Prime Day. So I guess they were just trying to drive people back to the stores and said, if you like shopping online, then you might as well just come in and see it. It didn't seem like their biggest deal was, we're going to offer stuff that matches.
Yeah, that's not a, to me, kids don't care if it matches or not.
They prefer it doesn't match.
they just put things on and they're just like, hey, I'm here. And I guess they were trying to go that direction because it does make it easier for parents. It's like, hey, just go to your room and find some clothes and put them on. And if they mix and match, they still look decent, which kids never do. And it's not like, it's this like meltdown of, why do you look the way you do? It's more like, oh, I totally understand, you're a parent too. Your kid is just exploring and experimenting and being more independent. And so it doesn't really matter, and it shouldn't matter, but I think that's what they were trying to aim for.
What does matter, though, and I think this is inherent with this segment of the industry, the kid-focused brands, Toys R Us went out of business last year because an investment firm bought them, saddled them with debt that wasn't related to the company, And ironically, maybe not ironically, in 2010, Jim Bury, private equity firm Bain Capital, bought the group in 2010 for $1.8 billion, so more than the value of the company, saddled it with debt. At the time of the 2017 filing, they owed $1.3 billion.
Wow.
They had assets of $755 million, and during the restructuring, it eliminated $900 million of debt, where it told creditors, you're not getting this money back.
Yeah.
And so, that being said, it still had $400 million worth of debt after the restructuring, and surprised they couldn't make money. So Toys R Us and Jim Bury, maybe these are two brands that would have survived without a private firm, a capital firm, extracting all the equity out of it. And this would just be another example from Bud Fox and Wall Street, and then buying his father's airline firm, selling off all the components. So we're going to sell off the runways. We're going to sell off the jet manufacturing. We're going to sell off the gas services. And then we're going to say, you're not profitable, and declare it bankruptcy so we don't know anything at the end of it. So now we know what killed the Jim Bury star. It wasn't the radio. It wasn't the video star.
Nope.
It wasn't Amazon.
Nope.
And it wasn't Target or Walmart.
Nope.
It's probably Bain Capital. And so I think it just goes to, once again, looking at that ROIC score. What is the debt ratio of these companies? How much are they carrying? With the interest rate going up, it's no longer free money. They have to pay it back now. And that's the biggest difference of what occurred. So one of the big other debts is, and this is probably the weirdest one to me, we all know Sears is going out of business. They've been going out of business my whole lifetime, and now I'm damn near in my 40s. And I've never purchased a thing from Sears outside of an outlet center, and I bought like one of those exhaust tubes that connects your dryer to the wall so that the lint just doesn't build up in there. That's the one thing I've ever
Sears
bought from
more
Sears.
Of our parents' generation and them going there and having memories. I don't have any, like, oh, yeah, I remember going to Sears. No, I don't. I don't have that memory at all, except for maybe as I got older in that outlet store. Which is weird to see a Sears outlet store to me, but whatever.
Well, the only Sears I knew that was left is the one in Lubbock. And it's just the mall so small, you would occasionally walk by Sears and see the tumbleweeds rolling through it. But even in Houston, I've never walked in a Sears, so that's weird. But Eddie Lampert, he's been the owner of Sears. He owned Kmart. And then he said he's going to merge the two because what everybody loves is two failing brands to come together to make one large failing brand.
Let's unite.
So Eddie Lampert, it's going into auction. Sears is supposed to go away because they keep going bankrupt and not paying their debts, similar to Jim Bury, that, hey, you're just not going to get $700 million, but let us continue doing business. And we would like a loan from you, by the way. Okay. Tax write-off. Eddie Lampert, the CEO of Sears, won a bid to salvage Sears holding. The holding values it at $5.2 billion. The how? It's just real estate. That's the how. They have leases, they have buildings, they own real estate, and they own tons of lawnmowers, probably, that's stuck in all their outlet centers. A hearing to approve the sale, so Lampert is selling it from Sears Holding to his company, ESL Investments, which stands for Eddie, middle name S, Lampert Investments. So the deal doesn't release him from liability over the previous transactions, but he has been asking for such a guarantee through negotiation to head off claims from creditors. So what this seems like is a lot of insider trading that, hey, I'm going to sell it to myself and then say, you know what, Eddie, you don't have to pay me back this money. And then myself as Eddie says, you know what, I want to, but since you say I don't have to, I'm not going to, and everything should be fine.
I think the name gave it away. ESL Investments.
Yeah. So I will say, as we're in a government shutdown, this bid will save 45,000 jobs, which I would have never imagined, but we're a country of over 600 million people. It's easy to see how there's 45,000 jobs at all the locations across the U.S. They employed 68,000 when it went bankrupt last October. I'm confused. And why would anyone invest in this company if he keeps just selling it to himself?
Yeah, that's weird. I'm surprised that many people actually went to go work for Sears.
Well, I don't blame people for getting a job at Sears. Like, a job is a job, and it's probably, you need a paycheck. But can you trust a company that says, hey, we have a 401k, we have a pension, who goes bankrupt every 5 years, and one of those first things they cut are the pensions and the 401k, that we're going to raid those, and that's where we're going to get our money from. So you really aren't working towards your retirement.
Yeah.
And so just interesting. And so this kind of goes into what are investor rights? Because at this point, most people have heard of PG&E, the electric company in California that burned down the state, is trying to file for bankruptcy again. One of their major investors has beef with the plan and wrote a public 6-page letter. But as investors, what are your rights? To a shareholder and investor of a publicly traded company or a privately held company? And so looking it up in Investopedia, I found like 6 major components and then went in some details through doing research through other means. So the 6 major rights are voting power on major issues, ownership on a portion of the company, rights to transfer ownership, entitlement to dividends, and opportunity to inspect corporate books and records. Oh, it's 6 things. And the right to sue for wrongful acts. So voting power, a major issue. This includes electing directors and proposals for fundamental changes affecting the company, such as mergers or liquidation. Voting takes place at the company's annual meeting, and if you can't attend, you can do so by proxy mail and vote. So some of these annual meetings are like the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting is a massive event that people look forward to, fly in and go to the meeting and vote, even if they own 1 share of it or 10 shares. Because you're getting insight into all these industries that the Berkshire book owns. Now, most of them, you will get something in the mail saying, we have this issue or a proxy a couple times a year that we're electing a new board member, where we want to propose something to do with our debt, or we want to do a debt consolidation. And you'll get mailers, even if you own 1 share. Like this week, I got one from Medley. I didn't even read it. I have 1 share in Medley, but it's there. But not all shares have voting rights. It depends on the class share if you actually get those in the mail. Class A share refers to the classification of common stock that is accompanied by more voting rights. Class B share is usually given to is usually not given to the company management team. In some cases, Class B shares have voting rights that aren't equivalent to the rate of Class A shares. So while Class A share might be considered as full vote, a Class B share might be considered as a half vote, that you need 2 Class B shares to equal 1 Class A vote. Or some Class B shares have no voting rights, as seen with tech companies such as Facebook or Google. There was talk earlier this year that, hey, maybe we need to get rid of Mark Zuckerberg. He's the problem. The only problem? He has all the voting rights. That him, Sheryl Sandberg, some other people. But primarily, you would have to convince Mark Zuckerberg to vote out Mark Zuckerberg, since once they're sold from the people who have Class A, their rules say that those convert to Class B shares and now no longer have voting rights.
Yeah.
So it helps consolidate power, so someone can't come in and be like, now I've bought 25% of Google, I'm going to start making the decisions for Google.
Yeah. And just FYI, Berkshire Hathaway does give you voting rights if you have Class B shares.
Yes, they do give
them. Because I have just, it's not a lot, but I have some.
But you get to vote on major issues.
Yes, I get to vote, and you do, you know, I do get that invitation to go to the annual meeting. Obviously, that does cost some money to go, and you have to take PTO to do that. I have not had the opportunity to do that, but I do know some people that have, and it is an experience that if you have the opportunity to participate in it, go by all means.
People like, recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, and plus, you'll be surprised just the people you meet and just the network involved. So you might meet somebody and click, you know?
Yeah. And so the other main right is going to be ownership in a portion of the company. Previously, we discussed in the event of corporate liquidation, bondholders and preferred shareholders are paid first. Facebook goes under, Class A, Mark Zuckerberg gets all of his money paid first. Then you, the shareholder, the second person. But if there were bonds outstanding that Facebook needed to take out loans to acquire a company, it doesn't happen. They have too much liquidity. That's why they keep buying stuff. But let's say it does. In this case, Sears takes out a loan. They say, we're going to issue bonds. It's a bond offering because we need to raise money. When they go kaput, Lampert owes the bondholders first, then the shareholders. So it's a bankruptcy. It takes away the advantage of a shareholder and their rights, technically, because you're not going to get paid on your investment, especially if the bondholders owe more debt than the company is worth at this point. Your stocks are just now worth negative, and now you can't even sell them.
Great.
So, and that goes against the right to transfer ownership, that nothing of nothing is nothing if you can't transfer it. So Enron on the last day was worth 12 cents.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to buy your 12-cent stock.
Nope.
So, sure, you had the right to transfer ownership, but you didn't actually own anything because it was worth nothing at that point compared to what you bought. So the right to transfer ownership means shareholders are allowed to trade stocks on the exchange. A company can't force a shareholder outside of the IPO period to hold the shares against their will. It is the investor's right to be allowed to liquidate if they choose to. What's the IPO period, you might ask? Well, that might be referred to as a lockout, lock-in, or lock-up period. It is the period after the initial public offering in which large shareholders are restricted from selling their shares for a predetermined amount of time. This period is usually 2 quarters. It's either 90 days to 180 days. The purpose of the period is to ensure that the market isn't flooded with shares after the stock is made available to the public. That being said, the large unlock period after the Facebook IPO made almost 800 million more shares available for the public trading. That's in addition to the 900 million plus available at the IPO. And it created a 12% gain for shareholders who remained invested after the stock dropped nearly 50% from that initial date. When it first came out, I think it debuted at $26. It went down to the teens. And of course, now it's in the hundreds. So if you held on that roller coaster ride, you made a lot of money out of it. Mm-hmm. Or it could be the other story of Snap. Or Fitbit.
Yeah.
Or all these other companies that have lost money since their IPO. MarketWatch article entitled, Can Snap Fall Even More as Lockups Expired? The answer was yes. This was published July 31st, 2017, and it referenced an academic study that looked at an IPO lockup from 2001 to 2011 and showed that all venture-backed companies studied suffered a decline in the 5 days surrounding lockup expiration. Overall, stocks fell 1.4% more than non-VC-backed companies when the controlling firm factors in IPO specifics. The average drop around the lockup may sound small, but this is a result of a large sample size. This includes Facebook. It also includes all the other companies that didn't survive. So Facebook is probably that median. They've made that median go up because Facebook overall has gone up over a large period. That And so that average drop may sound small. Academics say overall there's a wide variation in range of stock movements around the lockup expiration. It's actually not rare to see a 15% drop because a lot of these recent IPOs are very volatile stocks. Jay Ritter, professor at the University of Florida, writes, who studies IPOs. And so, that being said, you have the right to sell your stock unless you're one of those initial investors in the IPO. And as a non-institutional investor or in the corporation, you probably don't have access to that initial IPO stocks. So number four, entitlement to a dividend. Legally, the leader of an organization has a responsibility to act in the best interest of the shareholders, which includes claims to access. One part of fiduciary duty, which you'll often hear discussing stocks and when shareholders sue a company, is a share that you hold, you have the right to the company profits, which is why Silver Lake invested in AMC Theater this year. The company shared the investment in the form of a special dividend to the investors. The other duties of fiduciary duty includes corporate leadership acting in good faith, along with the avoidance of conflict of interest and prudence. Translation, Tesla is getting sued by shareholders for a lack of prudence after CEO Elon Musk publicly stated they were going private at the value of $420 per share. Needless to say, this didn't happen, and now Azalea Banks and Grimes are being subpoenaed to testify about the mind frame of the CEO at the time of the disclosure, as shareholders have lost significant value since that time, and the CEO was not acting in their best interests with the public statement. As a result, shareholders are exercising their right to inspect the corporate books and records to verify that Elon Musk states what he was referencing at that time. Because Elon was trying to beat the shorts, and he said 420 was for his girlfriend to make her laugh, and Elon is an evil villain, and we all know that, allegedly. But now he's getting sued for it. His corporate force, and not to joke around about it, he had to eliminate 7% of jobs in his organization. Mm-hmm. He's getting rid of the lower battery capacity for... the larger Teslas. He's still going to have the three. And with the government removing the $15,000 tax credit for the car, now the price of the vehicle has gone up for the average customer, and he has to account for that in terms of cuts for the business. Was he acting in the shareholders' best interest saying that? No, especially knowing that these were going to fail, or these were going to be in the future. And now a lot of those shareholders were probably employees as well that might participate in this lawsuit. But number five is opportunity to inspect corporate books and records. With the ease of accessibility, anyone could access publicly traded company financials, which is why companies have periodic audits to verify the data is valid and reliable. Even if you're not trading it, you can most likely find their quarterly reports on their webpage. Stakeholders and private companies have these same rights, though the data could be harder to come by. That you own part of it, you give 25% to your sibling to start a company, and you tell them they have to pay you back in 3 years. They say something's come up, they can't pay you back, but they're buying all this cool stuff for themselves. They got a new big screen, they got a bigger house, the company has added a fleet of vehicles. Hey, I need to see the books. Where's my money going?
Yeah.
You have that right because you're a stakeholder in the company. The courts grant you that right that they have to provide it. That, okay, y'all might have to split the cost of having an audit or a financial review, but you have that right as a stakeholder. The sixth and the final right is the right to sue for wrongful acts. In the case of Elon Musk, is currently being sued. Suing a company usually takes the form of a shareholder class action lawsuit. A good example of this type of suit occurred in the wake of accounting scandal that rocked WorldCom in 2002. WorldCom became Sprint. After it was discovered, the company had grossly overstated earnings, giving shareholders and investors an erroneous view of the financial health. The telecom giant faced a firestorm shareholder class action lawsuits as a result, More recently, Wells Fargo has been hit with a shareholder class action for misleading investors about its financial performance and fraudulent sale practices. If you remember, they are opening extra accounts for customers and not telling the customers. And so they have no idea what's happening to their money. So this leads me to a question. What is corporate beef? And beef is when a company tries to avoid their shareholder and fiduciary duty through malfeasance, fraud, or bankruptcy. Like in California, where PG&E has publicly declared they are considering filing bankruptcy to avoid paying many liabilities arising from forest fires sparked by their repeated negligence. Blue Mountain Capital Hedge Fund owns more than 11 million shares of the energy firm, in which a bankruptcy will likely leave the shareholders with worthless assets, as they are the only people, as the only people who have more rights than the shareholders and bondholders are the debtors, people that owe the money. So the court cases that they've already said they have to pay from the previous fire and this one as well. So before I read the letter, I think there needs to be a song. So give me 1 second. All right, so this article from Blue Mountain. We are writing you on behalf of Blue Mountain Capital Management. As a PG&E shareholder, we write to challenge the board's plan for a damaging, avoidable, and unnecessary bankruptcy. There is overwhelming evidence that PG&E is solvent, meaning they have money, they have liquidity, and it indicates they have about $1 billion plus in savings. We simply cannot recall a situation where such a valuable company filed for bankruptcy with such blatant questions about the necessity of doing so. We are aware that the board and the utility board have determined a Chapter 11 filing is appropriate, necessary, and the best interest of all shareholders, the fiduciary standard commonly ascribed in insolvent corporations. However, because PG&E is solvent, the board continues to have a duty to act in the best interest of its company and shareholders and not the best interests of all stakeholders. A Chapter 11 filing while PG&E is solvent is an utter abdication of duty. It may appear easier for board members to file Chapter 11, shifting the burden of dealing with the myriad of issues that will face the board and placing it squarely on the shoulders of the bankruptcy court and the company's advisors. But it will destroy value for the company, in particular its shareholders, the only group that you owe a duty. Before improper damaging leaks of confidential boardroom information, every Wall Street analyst found PG&E to have a large capital cushion, and both major rating agencies found PG&E's credit to be investment grade. Furthermore, we believe that the inflated and premature estimates of the contingent liabilities, with no mention of the contingent regulatory recovery or tax assets used to justify the Chapter 11, are at best inappropriate, and a further abdication of your fiduciary responsibilities. A bankruptcy is not only damaging to the shareholders, it also harms the company. It risks depressed asset sales, increased costs of near-term and emergence financing, and losing access to attractive securitizations financing available under the California Senate Bill, SB 901. Indeed, the leaks have already damaged the goodwill with regulators and the public, and at the time, PG&E needs it most. One legislator called the 8K deeply concerning news and ceased to work on potentially beneficial legislation. As a result, we implore the board to undertake solvency analysis immediately based on the parameters set forth in Exhibit A of this letter. We hold the company's advisors in high regard from prior work, successfully advising corporations with credible insolvency questions, PG&E, and ways to preserve shareholder value. We expect them to bring this expertise to bear as comprehensively, reasonably, and impartially as possible. However, we do believe with potential extraordinarily professional fees at stake, the advisors at least have the appearance of a financial conflict. And therefore, we believe the board must obtain second opinions from advisory firms that would not be hired in any capacity following a bankruptcy filing. End translation. We don't believe you. We need more people. They need to find ways that they're basically saying, one, we're going to sue you if you do this, and we're going to sue the board, we're going to sue the CEO who just received $1 million package, and they know if this happens, what is the advantage of a private company? If they say, we owe the state of California $30 billion, why should California help you avoid that debt when they could just take you over as a public utility and take all of that money and say, you know what? If you're not going to pay the debt $30 billion for the forest fires, then we're going to take you over and we're going to start running the company as the leadership and start and have the customers pay us directly. I think that's interesting at the least. And with the overall letter, this is what you see with corporate beef. This is an analysis of them flexing their shareholder rights because after this period, they won't be able to. So when you invest in it, look for where your opportunities are. Avoid capital firms who are just extracting money from it. Let's say like Bain Capital with Jim Bree, whichever capital firm took over Toys R Us and ladened it with all of their debt. And when companies start trying to get out of their debt by declaring bankruptcy with no reason, you're going to get letters like this. So for all y'all who grew up watching beef documentaries on WorldStar, just consider this a different level of beef, corporate beef. So thank you for joining us. This has been The Dividend, episode 40. Ella will return next week. Thank you for joining us, Cassie.
Thank you for having me.
And I think you hear my son in the background complaining that I won't play dinosaurs with him. So let me go ahead and do that. The opinions expressed on the show do not reflect the thoughts of our respective employers, family, or podcast network. We are not licensed by the FTC or SEC. Before acting on information on the website or from the show, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstance and seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor.
I declare bankruptcy!